Coming up on TMS, gold filling!
Lost left strutter.
Oh no, we're going to die. JK, you want to marry me?
Mind if I record this in case we crash?
Rage against the burrito.
Is our show always this gross?
A giant fart in the sky.
Is there a doctor on the podcast?
And more on this episode of The Morning Stream.
No, no, don't. I know it's lame, but it's just lame to me. It's lame, but not smell my feet. That is lame.
You'll get him fixed now.
The Morning Stream. You look like crap.
Good morning and welcome to TMS. It is Tuesday, March 28th, 2023. I'm Scott Johnson. That guy right over there is Bobby Frankenberger, sitting in the old guest chair. Hello, Bobby.
Hey, Scott. Hey, Morning Stream. How is everyone?
It's Tuesday's own Bobby. You're here on your own day. Does that feel good? Bad?
It feels like a comfortable coming home. It's like you're coming home early from school. You know, you're the place that you know you're supposed to be,
right?
But you're there at a time that you're not normally there, and it feels really.
That's a strange feeling. Yeah. And you just wonder, does my mom know? Does my mom care?
Yeah. Does my mom know I'm on the show the whole time today?
Mm-hmm. Maybe not. Maybe so.
Am I going to get in trouble?
But we talked about it a bunch pre-show, so patrons got a load of this and live streamers. But Bobby had a flight today. And today was just like a usual training flight, right? Like a normal one.
Yeah, and like you said, I won't get into the details because, you know, if you want the details, you really ought to be a patron.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
But I have my medical flight test coming up on Thursday, so we were practicing for that.
You know what they ought to do for that? We were talking before the show what a medical flight test is and going through all the details, but one thing we didn't talk about is it'd be cool if the medical flight test involves somebody faking a heart attack up there, you know?
Yeah.
And then what would you have to do? So I guess all you could do, because your chief thing would be, I need to land this and not just throw everything to the side and perform CPR somehow in that little cockpit. You need to land first and then get the help, right? Is that what they would tell you to do?
Probably. So you're saying like not a medical, you're saying like a test for a medical officer on the plane.
Yeah. Like
or a medical emergency.
Yeah. Let's say that your passenger, the reason I bring this up, I saw a dumb episode of, I think it was 911, this procedural show that my wife's really into. I don't know.
They don't have creative names for those shows.
No, they don't. And you know what? They make crap loads of viewership and money. I understand why they're popular. But they're so cookie cutter. Anyway, and it's even got like really great people in it. Peter Krause is in it. Freaking, who just lost a supporting actress of the, I can't think of her name. Strange Days. Wakanda Queen. What's her name?
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
The bad with names. Lady. Anyway, I mean, they were in Angela Bassett. She's like the main actor in this thing. Anyway, there's like all these like highfalutin actors and stuff doing this show, but it's so like paint by the numbers. The music feels like it's been used since CSI Vegas. Like it's just all really standard. But there was a scene where this guy decided to take his girlfriend up in his plane. He was like you, except he had passed his thing, so now he can fly these all the time. He takes her up in the sky, and in the middle of it, he decides to fake that the plane is going down. So he pretends
because he's being an a-hole.
He's being an a-hole. So he's like, oh no, we've lost left strutter or whatever the hell goes wrong, right? I don't know.
Yeah, and the strutter.
The strutter. And the plane starts to like, you know, he makes it wobbling. It's very stressful. And he's telling her, get the manual out, read me the stuff. And she starts reading through this manual and she's panicked, you know, beyond belief. And then part of the manual evolves into from this emergency language into a wedding proposal. All right.
Oh, my God.
So she suddenly realizes what's going on, looks at him. He chills out. Now, it looks like happy ending, although I'd still be pissed at this guy. But it looks like she's like, yes, I will marry you and all this. And then she has a heart attack because her stress levels are so high from the freak out.
Also, that's the wrong answer. The answer is no, I will not marry you.
I know. I was like, you know what? If there was ever a definition of a real-time red flag, it's happening right in front of you, lady.
No kidding.
Yeah. Don't marry this guy. He's a weirdo.
Yeah.
But anyway, then he has to panic and call in and say, my fiance, you know, she can only barely call her that. is having some kind of thing, and they're like, "All right, sir, you just need to." Anyway, the point I'm getting to here is the solution was there's not much you can do for her up there other than you got to land this frickin' plane.
Yeah, there's a story I heard recently of a student who had to have been later in their training, I guess, but a student who landed a plane, their CFI lost consciousness next to them. Their flight instructor lost consciousness next to them. The student thought the whole time that the flight instructor was just messing with him, which, wow.
Yeah.
But it lost consciousness for, I can't remember the reason, but he was unconscious the entire time, slumped over, leaning on the student who was flying the plane, and they landed the whole plane with the CFI just like slumped over on
it. So the student was just like, this must be part of my training. And then
I guess so. What I wonder about is what kind of a flight instructor is that you really thought like, this guy's messing with me again.
Yeah, that's hardcore, dude. I feel like when he landed and found out that no, he really was having a thing, I guess what else is he going to do? He still did what he had to do, right?
Yeah,
still,
I mean, he did the right thing. Yeah. You got to land the plane.
Yeah, but do you think was it quiet up there? Was he like, all right, enough of this, and like elbowing? You know, there's a lot of meat in this in the sandwich I haven't heard. I need to know more about how that went. Too, did he just a little trick, is it? Okay, I'm going to pretend like it's not even happening. Like, how did he react? That's what
I want
to know.
The whole story. I wish there was a GoPro on the plane or something.
They should put cameras on and in everything. That's the rule.
I wish there was. I wish I'm kind of want to put a GoPro inside my plane, but I'm kind of afraid to ask my instructor if I could.
You know. Oh, will he? Oh, because, well, okay, let's think about how the scenario would go. You'd say, you know, I do a bunch of internet content, and I also talk a lot about my flight training and and stuff on a podcast, and I have a science show and all this. You can say all these things to preempt it, and then you go, you think it'd be okay if I had a GoPro in here just to create a little content, show people the process of what's going on, or is that frowned upon? That's how you ask. If he freaks out at that, then something's wrong with him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
because I'll bet he may say no, but I bet he just go, oh, yeah, that's against the thing. They won't let us do it, you know, or something like that. I don't think you get in trouble. You just got to know how to ask it, right?
Yeah, that's the part that's hard for me, the knowing how to ask.
Well, it's hard in the moment, right? Because you're like, he's a fancy instructor guy. He could take, with a swoop of his pen, he could stop your flight plans forever.
Exactly. I refuse to fill out your logbook.
And then with a flourish, he turns and leaves. Anyway.
But no, they don't teach us how to handle in-flight medical emergencies. I guess, what would you do? They tell you to land the plane. They tell you to turn around and ask if there's any doctors on the plane.
Oh, yeah. Any doctors here? Oh, it's just us two? Well, shit. What are you going to do? Well, good luck. Thursday's big deal, and we're excited for you.
Thanks. I'll let everybody know how it goes, or I won't, and you'll know, because I don't want to talk about it.
So I don't know if this is a science question or not, but I'm going to share with you an experience I had yesterday that I don't understand. All right?
Every question's a science question.
That's true. Science isn't everything, damn it. So look out, everyone. Here comes this question. So my dog yesterday, I gave her a peanut. Singular peanut. Okay, little dry roasted singular peanut. She's eaten peanuts before, which I'll get to in a second, but I gave her one peanut yesterday. Now, there was a time where an entire Planters hoo-ha thing fell over and dumped, I don't know, a ton of peanuts. She ended up eating like 50 of them before I could stop it.
Yeah.
So I know that she's eaten peanuts. And by the way, she was fine. She ate those 50 peanuts. She never had a problem. She never had a psycho poop. She never barfed. She never had a reaction. And I read that peanuts are fine for dogs.
Peanuts are fine for dogs.
Yeah. So I wasn't worried about giving her the one peanut because previously, like I say, she'd had 50 and nothing happened.
Yeah.
I gave her one peanut, and within 5 minutes, she has ralphed the one peanut on the carpet. She horked
nothing
up a
else,
single
just the peanut.
The peanut plus whatever else was in there, which wasn't much. Okay. You know? So what I'm trying to understand is, what the F, dogs? You eat if you can eat 50 of them, you can eat one of them. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me that she would get like sick. Maybe she was too empty? and one peanut on an empty stomach is enough to make her...
Maybe. That's happened to me before when I'm really hungry and then I eat something and I feel nauseous.
Yeah, that'll happen, I guess, if you eat too quick or... I don't know, if you let yourself go too long without eating and then you're like, oh man, give me that burger, and then that, I don't know.
So it was some minutes later, you said?
Yeah, it was like maybe 2-3 minutes later. It's not much.
Because my first thought was maybe gagged, right?
Oh, well, she is weird. Maybe she did. But this is Rainer with the tiny throat and this shaky disposition.
But you probably would have seen signs of that, like, you know, hacking and, you know... Doing something things like,
yeah, I would have seen it something like that, but instead it was just like, thanks for the peanut. Bleh, here it is on the carpet for you to deal with. Really annoyed
maybe,
me.
Maybe she liked it so much she wanted it again.
Maybe that, well, she's proved that time and time again. Sometimes she'll hork on the rug.
Dogs love to do that.
Oh, they love it, dude. I mean, waste not, want not, right? The good stuff's still there. Can you imagine if people did that? Like, this is what I understand. Okay, another science tangent.
I'm sure there's 8 billion people on the planet. I'm sure there's some people who do that.
Well, there are some. But, yeah, it's a numbers game, but it depends on percentages. But here's what I'm saying. Like, our aversion to certain things makes sense to me. Like, if I see somebody hurl, me going, what is that based on? That's based on me going, that's somebody who is sick and not well.
Yeah.
My preservation... depends on me staying unsick and staying well. Ergo, I shouldn't go near that. That's gross because of that, right? That's why it's repulsive to us. The same reason a lot of things repulse us. It's like it's a survival thing.
Right. Your disgust response has been honed by evolution over many millions of years.
Right. And I think about that every time I see something gross. And I also think it's a great way to think about things. If somebody was going to go into the medical field and have to deal with that kind of stuff all the time, the way I would think about it would be, I would think about it evolutionarily in that context so that I could compartmentalize the part of my brain that wants to react in a repulsive way, but instead see it for the science that it is, and then therefore I can be a doctor and see blood and not worry about it. Well, anyway, so why do dogs... have brains, because, just kidding. Why do dogs have this thing where they're like, oh, I just horked lunch all over the place. I'm going to go eat that again, where we would never do that, ever.
Right.
So why our allowance is so much, our willingness to allow such things is so much narrower than a dog's, and I don't understand why dogs are okay with it, you know, because they want to survive too. They have their own evolution to speak of. They don't want to, you know, eat a thing that's bad for them. So why do they do that?
Maybe it's just that it's not... evolution has worked differently on dogs, so maybe it's just not as bad for them. Maybe they can, you know, stomach that kind of stuff more easily for us because it's harder for them to find food, maybe. These are all speculations. I don't know. Maybe we have evolved less tolerance for that kind of a thing because maybe we used to do it.
Maybe we did. Maybe we were all cave people. you know, yakking all over the cave and then going, well, that's we're not wasting that. Yep. I'm going to eat that. Yeah, I don't know. Plus, we've helped dogs evolve too quickly in so many ways. Like, domestication of dogs is like rapid fire evolution in a weird way. Like,
you think
curve them to be what we want them to be.
Yeah. You think two dogs next to each other, one of them pukes but doesn't eat it. Do you think the other dog says to the other dog that puked, hey, you gonna eat that again?
Are you going in for another one, or do you mind if I do it? Yeah, dogs are gross, it turns out. But anyway, the peanut and the popper was our story today. Hope you enjoyed it. Also, gold filling question. I didn't mean for these to all be scientifically related things, okay? I didn't mean for that. But you're here.
Yeah.
And you have a science podcast, so we may as well just dive right in.
Use it or lose it, right?
Use it or lose it. That's right. So I've got this text I got from... Did they leave a name? They didn't. Anyway, here's what they said regarding gold fillings. I have been a longtime listener since the instant, so thank you for all that you do for us. I just happily became a patron today. Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much for that. On the subject of gold fillings, I agree. They are the best. That is true. I have one up here on my upper right, and that thing has... been there since 92, I think, and it's never had any issues ever of any kind. I got a big old crown. It's perfect. All other teeth with the work on them have either said, oh, we don't like silver no more, boop, pop it out, we're doing something else, or, you know, whatever, some form of crap has happened to many of my other teeth. Not that one. Solid as a rock. The gold standard, you might say, Bobby. You might say it.
Right. I see what you did there, yeah.
Yeah. So here's what he says. I'm a machinist of 24 years. I have a degree in metallurgy. Ooh. And I know what gold can do to ceramic. The answer is nothing. Ceramic is one of the hardest cutting tools for any metal. But ceramic's not a metal, though, is it?
No, it's not.
What does he mean there?
But it's very hard. It's very hard, though.
Okay. It says you can cut tight.
I don't want to use the wrong word because of where this is going. The words are important.
That's true. He says you can cut titanium with it. He says the only thing about it is that it's very brittle. Well, that's interesting. I can only use it on a cut that isn't interrupted. It has to be smooth. If there is any chatter, the ceramic will shatter. Oh, man, I love that. If you have the chatter, it will shatter.
Yeah.
In the hands of Bill Shatner. Anyway, even with gold or other soft metals, honestly, I don't see how this can happen in your mouth, even though it sort of makes sense. We're talking about the tooth below my gold tooth that shattered. Ceramic is so much harder than gold. It had to be another factor. It could be the bond. I like the glue or the heat. Or like the glue or the heat that they treat it to make it stick. Thank you for all you do. Maybe this question is for Bill or Bobby can explain it better. All right. So here's the short story is, if you missed it on the show, I shattered a crown at the bottom, a ceramic crown. And part of my theory was, well, I've got this gold one up top. Maybe it's just superior in every way. I don't know. But it wasn't just that. There was crackers, I guess, for this one. I was eating some kind of cracker. I think what happened is you got the exact right angle, the exact right trajectory. It's pointing down almost like a wedge, you know, and I went and that did it. So there's other stuff involved, almost like having a spike that I then hit with the gold hammer. Bink is kind of what happened to me. Bobby, your knowledge of gold, lay it on us. What do you think's happening here? What's going on here with the gold in our mouths?
I really don't know. Material science is something that I've always been fascinated by, but a lot of the science around materials and metals and everything are so specific to that area of science that I don't encounter like I don't encounter it a lot because so it falls out of my head all the time.
Right. Sure.
So I know that a lot of different metals have different properties and things like hardness, strength, and brittleness are all important properties, and they're different things.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I know that hardness is a measure, and this person was talking about how ceramic is very hard, and what that means is that hardness is a material's ability to maintain its shape under stress. So it's not going to deform very easily.
Mm.
That's what ceramic is, but brittleness is the ability for it to come apart. And I think I could be wrong about this, but I think the reason that happens is because the crystalline structure of the solid breaks, and because of the nature of how crystals are held together, it starts to that break propagates throughout the material, and then it breaks into a bunch of pieces.
Yeah.
And it just shatters a little bit or cracks very easily. And so that's what he's saying ceramic does. Ceramic, interestingly, is not just one thing. There are a lot of different types of ceramics. It's just a term for like an organic material, or maybe it can be I think it is inorganic actually. But it's non-metallic and it's just fired and heated up like a clay, but to a really high temperature.
Right.
And then it creates, it makes it, that process makes it really, really hard. But I've always found metallurgy to be interesting. All the different ways that you can affect a metal by heating it up really hot, like near its, you know, there's a point at which you heat up metal and it loses its magnetic properties.
Right.
And that's what, when you're forging swords and steel and stuff like that, yeah, you do it, you heat it up to right when it's about to lose its magnetic properties, and then you cool it down, and the speed at which you cool it down affects the properties of it, and all this kind of stuff. And I wish I knew a lot more about that, but I don't.
There's always time. You're a guy that likes to learn things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I like to learn by doing, so I've always thought that it would be really fun to make a forge in my backyard, you know, or in my garage or something.
Yeah.
But I haven't. I was about to come up with an excuse, but I don't think any of, like, I don't have an excuse. It was just, I haven't yet.
Well, you're too busy, you know, one thing at a time, one side interest at a time. You got to get your flying license, your pilot's license, and then go melt down a bunch of thermite or whatever the hell metal you want. I guess thermite's not metal, is it? Or is it?
I don't know. I think it explodes or something.
It does explode.
It burns really hot.
But I don't know why it does that. But anyway, your metallurgy career can wait until your pilot career happens.
Also, no one told me before I had kids how much time it takes to raise them.
Oh, yeah, no.
If I had known.
Yeah. If you had known.
Someone had warned me.
You have the two or the three? I don't remember.
I have two.
All right, you've got two. I had three. Brian had one. It turns out, this is a good PSA for the public here to hear. It turns out raising kids takes a bunch of time.
It takes like, I think at least 18 years.
Oh, easily. And then if you break that down per hour, it's pretty insane what you got going there, you know?
Yeah.
Hour it's per kid.
It's pretty nuts.
Yeah, per year, per 18-year life. And even then, they're not always ready. I mean, I don't know if you've noticed lately, but the world hasn't been too great at making sure an 18-year-old can just go off and be on their own like they used to. There's no such thing as a starter home anymore. There's starter cardboard on the street. That's a thing.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a weird time. But, yeah, I'm going to agree with you there. Raising kids, it takes time.
Yeah.
And you never get to stop. And then at some point, you flip over, and now they're helping you de-raise or, you know.
De-raise?
Or a different kind of raise. You know? It's like we raise R-A-I-S-E, our children, and then they R-A-Z-E, us.
Yeah.
At the end.
I love that as a... as a euphemism for aging. It's de-raising.
De-raising. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're all going to need their help at some point, I figure. So I've got, you know, I had three. So it should be a good tripod of help if you need it. That's the idea. We'll see what happens.
Because I have two daughters. Your two daughters, Carter and Taylor, right?
Yeah.
Taylor.
Yeah.
How far apart are they?
So there are three. All three kids are 3 years apart.
Yeah, so my two daughters are 3 years apart as well.
Yeah, we did that on purpose. We thought, we didn't know why, but we just felt like that was a smart range.
I think it's a good age split because they're close enough, you know, but far enough apart to where they still like the same things and they can get along together and do stuff together.
And the 3 year old can actually help a little bit when there's a new baby in the house.
Not
super reliable, but you know, it's not like raising a 1 year old while you have an infant. It's much easier because they're walking, they're potty trained, they're all that crap. And hand-me-down clothes, another good one, Chad. My oldest daughter's clothes went right to Carter every time. And then Nick came along and was like, ah, shit, we got to buy all new stuff.
Did Carter resent that in any way?
No, she did have that middle kid syndrome thing everyone talks about where...
they feel left out or forgotten?
Not left out, they just feel like the oddball. And she is kind of the oddball, and I mean this in a good way. Like she's goofy to a strength, and I can't help but think it just has a little bit to do with the cultural implications of being in the middle kid. I could be wrong. She might be listening. I'm not sure she's in here or not. But I think it actually benefited her to have that kind of weird middle bit. But Taylor was the one. When they were little, she had all kinds of resentment about a new baby entering the frame. She did not like that at all. And it took her, I think, a long time to get over that. They're great friends now and, you know, get along swimmingly and no issues at all. But when they were little, you could tell Taylor was just like, you're up in my business.
Yeah. You
know? So that was a thing. And then Nick comes along And he just kind of goes where everybody wants him to go. It's like, hey, we're going to go do this. So Nick would trot along like a good little brother would go just do whatever. Yeah. And I think that inadvertently gave him, at least especially at a younger age, gave him a fear of making choices. Mm. And I don't know if it's because his sisters were just so like, let's go. Come on, Nick, we're doing this, or something. And he just kind of went along. So when it came to somebody saying, Nick, what do you want to do? He'd kind of freeze up. So if we took him to like this, we tell the story all the time. We'd go to like a dollar store and we'd say, all right, everybody gets one thing for a buck. You know, Taylor wants a doll. Carter wants a whatever it is. And Nick would end up finding like four things that he really wanted. One would be like a dart gun. The other one would be like a little bow and arrow plastic thing, some little action figure, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And he would be paralyzed with choice paralysis. He couldn't do it. He couldn't choose. And it would always end up like this. He'd be like, but I don't know. And we'd even narrow it down. We'd get down to two thinking, all right, now we're down to two. It's either the little G.I. Joe guy or it's this dart gun. Which one are you going to do? I don't want both. I can't decide. Like he would just lose his mind. And end up leaving with nothing because we had to go eventually. Yeah. The girls got whatever they picked. And Nick would always end up not knowing what he wanted. And it's not so bad today, but it was.
I wonder if that's because you being so young, you have so many. You have two parents and then, you know, in Nick's case, two older siblings. You've got four people in your life who can make decisions for you if you just wait long enough.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And so you never develop a sense of making a decision and then confidence in the decision that you made, you know?
I think that's actually a really good point because you don't feel like you need to have that confidence all the time because others are doing it for you.
It's certainly not explicit. Like, it's not like Nick sitting there saying, well, there's four other people here. I don't have to choose. They'll do it for me.
Yeah.
You know, but it happens. You know, there's that repetitive, I've made a choice, mm-hmm. and I have seen the consequences of that choice, whether they be good or bad, and it develops a confidence in your ability to choose, and mm-hmm. maybe that just wasn't there.
Yeah, I think you're right. Anyway, these are the fun things you learn when you raise your children, and it is a time-consuming prospect. All right. Well, with all that said, it's time for us to get a little news out of the way. It is time for the news brought to you by The Diablo Show, which put up a brand new show yesterday, episode yesterday. And when I say we or they, I mean me. it's a little solo show I do about the video game Diablo, all the Diablos. But right now, obviously, 4 is a big focus. And this was technically the end of season 2. I do 8 episodes per season. And prior to this, it was a lot more than that, but I called it season 1. Anyway, long story short, brand new episode out. Talk about the tail end of that beta that just ended. What we're looking forward to when it comes to June. Dude, that beta's so good. Everything about that game. I'm so excited. I can barely handle it. I can barely stand waiting 2 months for this. I don't know how I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know how I'm going to do it. Anyway, if you want to hear all about that and a bunch of hot takes and a whole bunch of listener feedback about their experience in the game and the beta, find that show wherever you get your podcasts. That's The Diablo Show. Or you can find it at frogpants.com/Diablo today.
I'm going to have to listen to The Diablo Show.
You should.
Because I've always known I was going to play. Diablo is just one of those things. The new Diablo comes out every once in a blue moon.
and you're going to and, play it.
And it's like, I'm going to play it. But I wasn't like champing at the bit for it yet, right?
Sure.
And then I pre-ordered it, but I didn't even get into the first round of beta testing, you know, because I wasn't, you know, like, I'll play it when it comes. And I'm not a big beta person anyway, so
yeah, me neither.
I'll play it in June when it comes out.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil stuff and all that, yeah.
This one, that's exactly right. But this time, and I don't often like to replay things for some reason. But anyway, this time I was like, you know what, I'll check it out. I'm not doing anything else. And man, it got its hooks in me.
Yeah.
So
it's good, man. It's really good. Yeah. It's like they captured the sauce that makes those always good.
Yeah.
And I really like the direction it's taking. And I go into, of course, all those details on the show. So do check it out. See what you think. And let me know your thoughts, dear listener. And let's move on to a news story. How about this one? This is weird. Wheel of Fortune host Pat Sajak tackled a contestant in a bizarre moment that has fans puzzled.
Was this on television?
Yeah, this happened live. So I'm going to pull up this video.
Oh, I have to see this.
You have a link as well, I believe.
Yeah.
And we'll try to suss this out because it's a little confusing. All right, so
there's the screenshot of this article is nuts.
The screenshot is already kind of crazy. So it says, during Tuesday's episode, this is last Tuesday, a game show player named Fred revealed he's a man of many talents, which include being a drama teacher, bar trivia host, and professional wrestler. When he admitted he gets paid very little to participate in the sport, Fred said he wrestled for the fun. Then Wheel of Fortune showcased the player's successful puzzle wins for the night on their official YouTube channel during the Hawaiian themed show. What happened at next is pretty insane. Once he made the bonus round, he guessed the puzzle in three attempts for the phrase category. Co-host Vanna White revealed the letters of the puzzle. His mind was wandering. That was what the puzzle was. HIS and so on. After Fred won the bonus round, the host announced he was taking home $75,800, and the player appeared emotional with his major Wheel of Fortune win. So here he is. Look at this, Chad. He's all stoked. Arms out, beard high. Ready to rock. You know, he's really excited. Won his money. Suddenly, Sajak ran over to the player and tackled him. He attempted to bend his arm behind his back and grabbed his face with the other arm while pulling him into somewhat of a headlock. What they think happened was Pat Sajak was like trying to have... It was supposed to be a fun thing of like, well, he says he's a wrestler. Let's test right. this. I think maybe it was too weird. That's a little too weird. You know?
Like I can't find a video, but I see all the pictures.
I thought the video was in here. No, it's not, is it? I thought it was linked here. Hold on, we're going to find this. Because I want to see it happen. YouTube has to have this. Pat Sajak tackles. It's the first search. Sweet. Okay. All right, here we go. I'm going to play this. We'll see what happens here. I don't want to... Okay. Okay, let's go back. Oh, yeah. Okay, so it's a little...
The pictures make it look a lot worse than it is. He's playing along, and he was just joking with him, right? He was just being jokey.
I think so. I'm trying to see if there's another angle on this. Let's see. Does Pat talk about it? Yeah, he's just goofing around. That's not a big deal.
He just ran over and grabbed his arm, and the guy immediately started playing along.
I think you all should be impressed that Pat Sajak can pull that off at 70, whatever he is. Yeah. You know? How old is Pat Sajak? Hold on. How old is Pat Sajak? He is 76 years old. Not bad. Not bad for 76.
He's doing great. Doing great.
Yeah. Do you think, how sick of the Wheel of Fortune do you think Pat Sajak is? Honestly. I know he's made, you know, his living there, his career there. For a hot second, he had a late night talk show that spun out and never went anywhere. I don't think acting ever happened for him or any of that. It was basically just like, I'm going to be the eternal host of this thing called the Wheel of Fortune. He must hate it. How can you not hate it?
Yeah.
Right?
And you probably heard all the dumb jokes that contestants make and
100 times weird. Over too. Like it's always the same jokes and ugh.
When I was a kid, I used to watch Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy, you know, because they were on back to back. I used to watch those with my mom when I was growing up, when I was a kid. And we had the Wheel of Fortune DOS game when I was really young, and me and my mom used to play that together because we just like playing puzzle games, right?
Sure.
And one day, I was always like, I loved those kinds of things. I was always pretty good at things like that, like word games and stuff like that. So I always did pretty well, and my mom would joke that I was too good and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
So one day we play and we're playing, and it's the puzzle comes up, and you see all the blank letters. And it says place.
Yeah.
Is the clue, right? It's just a place.
Sure.
And so it's my turn. I go first on this round, and I I solve the, I say, I'm going to solve the puzzle. And my mom's like, yeah, what a dumb kid. Mm. I haven't even guessed any letters. And I type in the Big Apple.
Yeah.
And I win.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Nicely done.
Right. And she never played Wheel of Fortune or watched it on TV with me again.
Really? That ended that. You were done.
She was like so mad about it.
Oh my gosh. You never
know.
She
didn't like get angry, but I did notice that I she didn't play it anymore.
Wow. So. All right. Well done, dude. You're responsible, by the way, for that.
I know. But it's I wear it as a badge of honor.
Sure, of course. Real quick here, I did the math. He has been hosting this show for 42 years. 42 mother effing years.
Wow.
That's a long time to say, all right, spin the wheel. Okay, we got a vowel up there. Oh my gosh, Vanna, shoot me dead. Like, he must just... Oh, and she's been there too the whole time, right? Let's see. Vanna White, 1980. Or no, 81 would have been the same. Something like that. But then, so they're forever attached, right?
Who was before Vanna White?
I don't know. Hold on. Original host.
Susan Stafford.
Chuck Woolery was the first host.
Oh, he's even a host before?
Yeah. The network version was originally hosted by Chuck Woolery and Susan Stafford. Who's that? Some lady. Don't know. Then you got Pat Sajak. And he hosted it with... okay. 82, 1 year later, Stafford was replaced by White. So Vanna White came in a year after Pat Sajak took it. And they've just been there since. People have done it. Bob Goen and Rolf Bernicki, they both did some stints, but it was just like while they were away. So there you go. Oh, Alan Thicke wrote the theme music. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. Anyway, good stuff. We've learned a lot about Wheel of Fortune today.
Yeah.
Taco Bell story. I always got to have a food story in here, so here's this one.
And lots of taco. We love Taco Bell stories.
I love Taco Bell. I'll admit it. If you said to me right now, let's go get tacos at Taco Bell, I would not turn you down.
Eat them in parking lots and all kinds of things.
Oh, yeah. How many was it? 5 soft tacos, 2 crunchies, and a gordita or something I ate in that parking lot? Yeah. Those are good times.
I'm reminded now of how much it was a lot.
It was a lot. It was a carb overload. It was a mistake is what it was. Anyway, Taco Bell customer damages a drive-thru and threatens to shoot employees when he was told he can't order the breakfast burrito anymore. It's too late in the day. Oh, man. An angry Taco Bell customer was arrested this week by U.S. Marshals. I don't care, said one of them. Just kidding. He didn't really say that. The Westlake Police. Westlake, interesting. That's my daughter's high school. She graduated from was called Westlake. But that's nothing to do with this. Westlake Police Department, after he damaged a drive-thru speaker, in a rage, he punched the drive-thru order window and then threatened to shoot employees, all because he couldn't order a grilled breakfast burrito, potato burrito. Oh, man. The man pulled up to the drive-thru and attempted to order the burrito, but the employee said the store was only accepting mobile and DoorDash orders. Oh, so it's not even a time thing. The man became irate, you think? Freaking punch the thing. And smashed the screen in the deal. It didn't stop there, says the police. The man continued around the drive-thru, punched a window, and threatened employees, saying that he would come back and shoot them. He eventually drove off. Police were notified about the incident and discovered that the angry would-be customer was a 28-year-old resident of Cleveland with previous felonies, assault charges on his freaking record.
Cleveland. Makes sense now.
I know, right? Cleveland. You can't trust Cleveland. Yeah. I have friends in Cleveland. Well, fine.
They love their tacos, their breakfast burritos in Cleveland.
Yeah, they do. Don't be telling me I can't get one. Although I guess what they were saying is don't do DoorDash or... See, here's the other thing I've noticed. We talked about it on the show. We've had Taco Bells here locally that just suddenly nobody's in them. Like in the middle of the day, lunch hour, that Taco Bell's empty. Why? Don't know. No sign. No nothing. We don't know why. Is it they can't retain people? There's not enough employees to run a day shift? Is it... 100 other things. I don't know. So maybe that's what this was. And these guys are like, well, we can only do DoorDash.
I think it is an employee thing.
Yeah, you think so?
It's not as glamorous a job working at Taco Bell as it used to be.
Yeah. I'm just trying to imagine. All right. I get that your average 28-year-old is maybe got reasons to be more pissed or something. But yeah. I'm trying to imagine a situation in any part of my life where I would be this guy. I can't do it. I just don't know what this takes. What does it take to be so mad about your breakfast burrito that you break stuff and threaten to shoot people? Like, I understand being a little like, oh, okay, thanks, and then drive away. I'd do that. I wouldn't be thrilled or go, oh, that's great. Thanks, guys. Thanks for letting me. I'm not doing that. But I'm not going to break things and threaten to shoot them. What's the difference? Why is that? Why are some people capable of like snap violence based on really silly circumstances? Like, I can't get my burrito. And then most of us aren't. What is that?
You're asking the right question. And the fact that you're asking it is a good thing, because I think it's important to understand why people do the things that they do.
Yeah.
One of the things I, when I was in school for psychology, an abnormal psychology class. And one lesson I really took away from that was something that the professor said, which was they were in the context of abnormal psychology. We're talking about like schizophrenia and stuff like that. One of the things that the professor always drove home was this idea that to those people, the decisions that they're making and the things that they're doing make sense to them. It doesn't make sense to us on the outside looking in. It looks very irrational. Even schizophrenic people who are doing weird stuff like word salad and just like very bizarre things. It looks very irrational and doesn't make any sense to us. But to them, everything makes sense. Everything is following logically to them. And so starting from there, and that's a lesson I've carried on from that, is that you really got to make sure you put yourself in, even if you can't understand where someone is coming from, because sometimes it's just really hard to understand why someone is behaving the way that they're behaving.
Sure.
It's important to remember that whatever's happening, there is a reason that makes sense to them. And maybe it's just that they really love burritos, breakfast burritos.
Yeah, it could be that they, perception's everything, right? So if I see a situation and I have my own take on it, it's entirely possible that 30 other people could look at the exact same situation and see a totally different take in each case.
Right.
And that's all this really is. He's seeing maybe just one more in a long line of the world is going to stop me from having a good day, and this just happens to be burrito day, where the rest of us will just say, well, yeah, we all have our ups and downs, but it's not that big a deal. Just go find another burrito. Like, you're right. Like, there's value in empathy there, I think. Also in de-escalation, right? Because if you can do that, and you can see somebody else's point of view, even if it's irrational, you can get them to come down a bit instead of making it worse.
Yeah. It's what's that movie where the guy's in traffic and he just gets out and then goes on a spree?
Breaking Mad. No. What was that called? Michael Douglas. Falling Down. That's it. Falling Down.
Falling Down. I always want to say Walking Tall, but that's a different movie.
Yeah. Falling and Down and Walking kind of Tall. Yeah. Some kind of weird middle act. You know, you need a third one to make sure everything's okay again. Standing up again. I don't know.
But maybe that's what's going on with this guy. Maybe it was a weird falling down situation, you know, like this was just the last straw.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. And those are the people that scare me the most. Like, it's no big shock that we're dealing with another horrible school shooting since yesterday. And it always brings these questions up in my head about, you know, what point, what is the snapping point, and how can we get in front of that first? You know?
Yeah.
We're not going to get into the whole discussion here, chat room or anyone at home, because this thing could go in 1,000 directions. And to be honest, I don't need the heat. But maybe here's what I would. What I'm going to suggest. Taco Bell. Always be open and never be understaffed. All right, that's it. I solved it. We're done. We did it.
And maybe some stronger glass on your order window.
Yeah. Also, it is scary. Like, if somebody said to me, if I was in that situation and I worked there, and they said, I'm going to come back and shoot you all, I would take that really seriously. Like,
I would call the police and I would leave.
Yeah, I'd get the F out of there. I'd make the call and then go. And then everyone will have to just deal with their gorditas somewhere else.
Yeah.
That is it for today's news. We're now going to dive directly into a segment that normally Bobby would just show up and do it toward the end of the show. And it's this right here. Check it out.
Science!
Bob is hungry, and the soup looks good.
Sure does. So, Bob, let's get into it. We're going to talk whatever you've prepared for. I don't even know. We usually have a little bit of notes, but you're surprising me, and I like that. So tell me what we're talking about today.
You've been playing a lot of that Dyson Sphere program, right?
A whole lot. An addictive. Yeah. It's an addictive bastard of a game, and I love it. I'm bad at
it. Well, I read an article on Ars Technica that made me think about you because of all the Dyson Sphere program you've been doing. So Dyson Sphere program, for anybody who's listening, I've never actually played it, but so Scott could probably tell me if
you,
I'm wrong,
dude, let me just say, do I know anybody who would be more into that than you? And I can't think of anyone.
It's on my wish list, but you know when you have like a giant, you know, it's like you get to a point where you're playing so many games and you're backed up and you're just like, you don't have this problem because you just like, you just play like three games a day and drop them like,
that was loud.
Like
yeah.
nothing. You're just like, I'm going to play a game. I'm done with it. I'm playing another one. Done with it.
Yeah, I kind of do. I do kind of bounce around because I get a lot of codes. Yeah. Like this morning, I got three codes already and all three of them are going to get played, but I'm probably not going to, you know, play them to fruition.
Right.
But once in a while, one will come along that I just have to see through regardless of what it is. Like I'm going to start it.
And I'm that way with like every game. So I have to be careful about what I pick up.
Sure.
Because once I start, it's like Pringles games are with me. I can't, once I pop it, the fun won't stop.
Yeah.
whether I want it to or not.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
But anyway,
oh, dude, you would love this game. It's all you would do. I'm warning you now. This is like you. It's made for you, and you'll never stop. Yeah. That's the truth. Anyway.
Yeah, I want to play it. I'll tell you, and I'll tell you. I'll let you know as soon as I do because you sound very excited about it.
I am very excited. I love it.
So, in Dyson Sphere's program, the idea of a Dyson Sphere is that you build some structure around a star that actually collects the energy from the star, and you use that energy for things. It would. You know, it's not a real, Dyson Spheres aren't real. They were proposed by some scientist, whatchamacallit, Dyson. I don't know his
It's not name. It's not the vacuum guy, is it? Or is it the same guy?
Is no, it, but wouldn't that be great?
That would be cool. Yeah.
But it's just a real proposed theoretical thing, and Dyson Sphere program is all about building those. But this is where we leave the game because I read this article on Ars Technica of written by Paul Sutter. He's an astrophysicist who talked about the feasibility of building an actual Dyson Sphere.
Oh my lord!
So I thought you would find this interesting.
I would actually, because I'm nowhere near the part of the game where I get to build a Dyson Sphere. That is kind of end game.
Yeah, isn't that funny? The whole thing that the whole game is about, you've been playing for how long have you...
Too many hours to even... I don't even know. I'd have to go look, but it's many hours. And I've talked to others who are like, I was 300 hours before I built my sphere. And there are other people who just know how to mainline it and get there really quick. Yeah, quick, but there's a lot you have to do. You're basically harnessing the energy and the resources of an entire solar system.
Right. And so that's the first thing that Paul Sutter... in this article mentions is that Dyson spheres, the idea is that you're surrounding the sun with panels, you know, like something like solar panels that would collect the energy of a star.
Right.
And you can imagine that would take a lot of stuff to build such a giant structure that's surrounding a star, whether it be, you know, some people talk about completely encompassing the star, or it's not even necessary to do that. You could, you know, talk about only covering the star a certain percentage and stuff like that. But the idea is it would surround the whole thing. It's going to take a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Right? So this guy did some math and said that you could do a shell. So if imagine the sphere you're creating is like a shell around the star, and you can make that at different distances away from the star. But the shell would be, let's say you're going to make a shell that's a 1 kilometer thick, and it would fill up some amount of distance around the star. It would take a mass of 2,000 Earths to do this.
That's a lot of Earths.
Right. So, and I think in this imagining, we're talking about a complete sphere. This person's talking about a complete
sphere. The idea is that there's all kinds of like theoretical models of how the sphere would work, but in this game From what I can tell from screenshots I've seen, and Tally in her own chat room is building hers right now in the game. But and I don't know how she's so good at that game. It's one of these things, and I put out a thing on Twitter saying there are games that people love and are completely obsessed with and just a pleasure to play but are really bad at. That's me and Dyson Sphere, for sure. But ultimately, you get to this thing where you're building out a big orbital thing on the outside of that system's star, and it's more of a static device rather than this, you know, like I was showing this one where it's like all flippy and science fictiony. If that makes sense. So yes,
right.
To answer your question.
So the point being, like is this a feasible thing?
Right.
Well, it would when we're talking about mining materials for this sphere that would go around a star, we're talking about taking planet amounts of materials. Like right. You would find a planet and you would turn that whole planet into materials for this sphere is right. How you would have to do this.
Right. That's the idea in the game is that you're tapping into essentially the essence of all these planets and gathering all their resources of every kind. There's everything from iron ore deposits to copper ore deposits, real simple stuff like that, to how are you capturing hydrogen, and how are you capturing if you have a tidal locked planet, you can just cover it in solar panels and it will just power everything. So it's like the ultimate in exploiting your potential resources on your planet is what this game is all
about. Because you're by the end of it, if this were a real scenario, by the end of it, if you were to say use Venus to mine materials, Venus would not be there anymore by the time you were done.
Right.
Because you have to convert the whole thing into materials. So you would need a lot of stuff for coverage. So it's not very feasible to turn a planet the size of Earth into materials for a Dyson sphere.
Right.
Because again, this person, just to do a back of the envelope math, said if you made a 1 kilometer thick shell around the star at Earth's distance away from the star, it would take 2,000 Earths, and it would actually only produce about 0.00004 of the energy that the sun is producing.
Oh, wow! But that's significant. I mean,
yeah, it's I mean, the sun produces a lot of energy, so that's not it's not really a small amount,
right?
But these are just like the extreme numbers that we're talking about. So what you would want to do is find a more massive planet to turn into material.
But also, right? Doesn't it matter what the planet's made of? In other words, if there's a ton of, I don't know, we can find a planet that's just mostly iron deposits or, you know,
sure, yeah,
metallic.
For sure, there are a lot of assumptions in this math. And one of the assumptions that he lays out is that we're assuming that the planet itself can be turned into useful materials for this.
So this will never work is the point. Because where are you going to get to?
Kind of where it feels like this exploration of the mathematics of it ends up going.
Because
right?
we have a mathematical improbability, maybe not impossibility, of having enough material to do it, and you can't just create matter out of nothing. So right. Yeah,
because yes, you could go to a more massive planet like say Jupiter, but then he talks about this in the article. Jupiter is very massive. It's many, many, many Earths. So if you need 2,000 Earths, maybe go to a planet like Jupiter, which is thousands of Earths in mass. But there's a problem, and that is that most of Jupiter's mass is gas.
Yeah, it's a big fart.
Right.
That's what that planet is. I mean, look, no offense to any Jupiternians. I don't know what they're called if they live on Jupiter. Nobody does, but you know what I'm saying. If somebody lives there, let's say an alien race that we haven't detected lives on Jupiter. No offense to you, but your planet's a giant fart in the sky, okay?
Right.
With a weird bunghole in the middle of it, the weird little bunghole thing that you got on the outside.
It's
anyway,
a giant, the red spot.
The red, yeah, the red, is it just called the red spot? What's that called?
Yeah, it's the big, the giant, I think it might be even called the giant red spot. Red giant spot or something like
that. And that's actually a storm or something that just never stops, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
That thing's crazy. All right. Well, they probably don't live there. But the point is, what if you... Okay. So let's say you had three Jupiters in our solar system, Jupiter-like planets. Okay, so let's say that's enough material, but also if you eliminate them from the solar system's orbital conflagration, doesn't that just send us into a weird spin and we're all screwed?
Yeah, all the gravity, the gravity of all the planets interact with each other. So for sure. And a lot of people say that the existence of planet, very massive planets like Jupiter and Saturn sort of act as a shield for the inner solar system because of their massive gravity. Whenever something moves into like a comet or an asteroid or something, a large object would be coming through the solar system. The massive planets that are out there, the gas giants, their gravity affects the orbit of those things or the trajectory of the things, and it kind of deflects it away from the inner planets.
Oh my gosh. You're making this game more interesting because the impossibility of it all is endgame. Like that's where you're aiming to do. And you literally start as a guy in a yellow mech on a planet where your first thing is to go cut a tree down. You know?
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah. Like I don't want that to sound boring because it's not. They do a really good job of letting you ramp up in a way that feels really satisfying and like, all right, I'm moving. I got conveyor belts now. Oh, I got iron, and now they're converting to these plates, and like it's got a really smooth transition. But you do. You literally like, okay, I gotta kill a tree, and then there's some stones here. I'll do those. And you're just walking around hacking on them. And then from there, and then eventually Dyson Sphere. And somehow the game has every step in between. It's insane. It's crazy. You should play it.
So Claire asks in the chat, so you're saying you can't mine the gas? You can mine the gas, but the problem is that all the gas on Jupiter it's like a bunch of hydrogen gas. You can't, it's like you can just convert that hydrogen gas into building materials.
Right.
Right.
That is correct. But
there's other things you could maybe do with the hydrogen gas and things that you might need to do, because the core of Jupiter, they think, is about 5 Earths worth of rocky stuff. So you could use that, and it would cover more space and make a larger sphere, right? But you're then at the distance away of Jupiter.
Right.
Which means the sphere would be larger. So you'd want to move it all closer to the star.
Right.
And so maybe you would have to mine all that skim all the hydrogen off the top like you're making skim milk.
Yeah, right? yeah.
Skim it all off the top and use that to eventually power what you're going to have to do is move the planet. Because he says, yes, you could move it closer, but you wouldn't want to mine the planet Jupiter at the distance that it's at and then build stuff and move the built things in. It would actually be more energy efficient to move the planet closer before you started mining it. Mm. And so that would take an enormous amount of energy.
Yeah, all the energy that you don't currently have access to. You know, like the improbability is really, it's key here. But boy, is it fun to think about, like just the concept of it.
So it's a really cool article. It's on Ars Technica. It's written by Paul Sutter. And if you find any of this interesting. Now, I don't mean to say like you should like Dyson Sphere program. I am absolutely going to play it. You've picked away at my willpower a little bit here.
Well, you need something to do until Diablo comes out for real. So, you know.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm probably going to play that pretty soon. And so this is just, it's fun. Like you said, it's fun to think about this thing that you're doing in this game and having fun doing it, how impossible it would really be, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, it's really good, you guys. Like, I talk about it on Core incessantly, so many of you who hear that show are probably already sick of me talking about it, but...
Well, I will say one thing before we wrap this conversation up about this article on Ars Technica. This article doesn't mention it, but I have heard people say that a Dyson Sphere is probably, as we've just talked about, pretty... unlikely. It's not very feasible. But a lot of people say that making a bunch of small robots and creating what they call a Dyson Swarm would be more feasible, and that might be something that...
Right? Because it doesn't need to be one giant enclosed structure.
Yeah. It could be a bunch of small robots with solar panels on them that somehow have a way to beam energy back to a single location, right?
Yeah, and they'd be modular, so if you had a situation where, you know, everything needs maintenance of some sort. You just have five of them fly back into town to get worked on, and there's maybe a little hole, but who cares? It's still collecting energy. You send them back in. Oh, we got part of array five is blinking out. Okay, fly them home. Let's take a look. I don't know why I'm thinking about maintenance, but, you know, you got to think of these things.
Have to think of these things.
Yeah, you got to think of all these things, but I love the concept of it. Like, I don't think, you know, our lifetime, we're not going to see any shit like this, but I love it. And I hope my kids, maybe my grandkids, I don't know. I hope someone who's alive today can experience these sorts of things before they die.
Yeah. All yeah, right? That would be amazing. Tally makes the good point that without a solid structure like a sphere, the solar sails that get them there, because that's probably what you would use, that'd be the most efficient thing, yeah, would decay, and how would you keep it where it's supposed to be? That's a really good question. I guess you could park a bunch of them into different Lagrange points, but that's a whole nother topic.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Lagrange points. Named after that famous song by ZZ Top. That's where that came from, everybody. Just kidding. Not true. Lagrange. Let me ask you this one final question. Have you seen the movie Sunshine before?
No, I have not.
So this is Danny Boyle, makes a lot of great movies. Oscar-winning director, Danny Boyle. And he made a movie called Sunshine, which starred Cillian Murphy, freaking Chris Evans before anybody knew who he was.
Yeah.
Like a whole bunch of MCU people actually are in it. And I think Michelle Yeoh's in it. Anyway, I love this movie. Love it, love it, love it to the end of time. I just think it's great. It's one of my favorite movies. But the concept is the Earth is getting real cold because the sun's dying. Or the sun is going out. It's not putting out the energy it was putting out at one point. So last ditch humanity effort is to put all these experts in a rocket with a giant solar sail, and then they fly out to the sun for however long that takes, years.
Take a bunch of expert people and shoot them into the sun.
Into the sun. Basically, yeah. And then they have a way, they're going to basically, it's a Kickstart idea. They're going to throw a nuke into the sun's center.
Oh, Kickstart. They're kickstarting the sun.
They're kickstarting the sun.
Like a Kickstarter. Like they started a Kickstarter.
Right. They're only looking for $10,000, but they might go over it. And I hope their stretch goals are going to be amazing.
For rebooting the sun.
But basically that is it. They're going to reboot the sun, and a lot of stuff happens to get in their way, and they end up doing it. That's not really a spoiler because, well, maybe it is. But anyway, you should watch Sunshine, and then we should talk about the science around the ideas of Sunshine, not its feasibility, because I don't think it's very feasible, but I would love to talk about that movie in that context.
Yeah, it sounds like an interesting movie.
It's really good. Yeah, highly recommend it. Some people don't like the turn it takes in the final third, that if you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. I actually really like it and think it's done extremely well. So there's that. Okay. That's going to do it for that. Always good stuff. Let's tell people where your show is, by the way. All Around Science is a podcast you can get wherever you get your podcasts. And what are you guys covering this week? What's going on?
All Around Science. That's right. Me and my co-host, Maura, we talk about science stuff every week.
Yeah.
Every week.
Yeah.
We have not missed a week.
Have you ever had a week where you were like, science, I don't want to do science today. We're doing, I don't know, civics or something.
We don't like science anymore.
Yeah.
No, we have not. We always talk about science every week. We've got something for you. This Monday, yesterday, the episode that released was part two of our talk about the science of about reading.
Oh.
I fall asleep while I'm reading a lot, so maybe that's where
I... Do you do that with... I mean, is it... how about audiobooks versus, like, regular books? Like, which one is this?
I don't listen to very many audiobooks, but I also don't read very much. I listen to a lot of podcasts.
I have the opposite problem. If I would like to listen to more audiobooks, but those put me to sleep and distract me. Like, I just have the worst time staying on task. It's like, I don't know, my brain goes somewhere and the guy's talking and I'm like, oh shit, I missed like a whole half a chapter. What am I doing? My brain's in another place. But if I've got a book or a tablet in front of me with words on it and I'm reading that way, I don't fall asleep. I stay super focused. I'm like way into the thing. I don't understand what's wrong with me.
Yeah, I don't know either, because reading is supposed to be really good for sleep hygiene, and it's really good for me because I usually only get a couple pages in and I'm too tired to keep going.
Yeah.
But the episode that we did was about the science of reading. It ended up being split into two parts. The first part was just about the brain and reading and how that works, but the second part was all about speed reading and how that works. And that's what the episode yesterday was about. So if you're interested in all the science around speed reading, yeah, you should check it out.
I'm very interested in that. Do you guys talk about that weird thing we talked about?
We do mention bionic reading. Yes, we do.
Okay. Because that seems like that would fit into that topic pretty well.
Mm-hmm. That is basically speed reading in its modern form. A little tease, a little taste of what we talk about. The speed reading is not a term that's used anymore. And they just had to sort of remarket speed reading into different things like bionic reading. And it's because the Federal Trade Commission had a problem with what they were selling.
So, oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So not allowed to speed reading is they cannot be sold anymore. So it had to be rebranded, remarketed.
Well, good luck to the FTC and also the FAA this week for Bobby on Thursday, where he gets learn how to fly with a medical emergency or whatever the heck it is. All right, there you go. There's that. Also, quick note, today is Tuesday, and that means the beginning of what will be a many weeks long effort for me to play Resident Evil 4 Remake without losing my mind. Along with me for the ride will be John Jagger, my co-host, or one of my co-hosts on Core. This is a tradition that he and I have. All the Resident Evil Remake games I play on stream, and he's there for them while I do it. If you want to watch me be an idiot, today it starts at 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Mountain Time is when it'll happen at twitch.tv/frogpants. Resident Evil 4 Remake with me and John. Tune in and check it out today at 3.
He's your chaperone.
Yeah, he is my chaperone, and makes it all somehow easier but worse at the same time. Can't explain it. He likes seeing me get into bad situations and not warning me because he knows that game back to front. He's a Resident Evil freak. He loves it all. He doesn't get scared by it. He just loves it for the gameplay. Scary video games terrify me. Shout out to Badger Lord who bought this game because that's the rule I have. I'm not going to put myself through this unless someone else pays money for it. Otherwise, I'm not going to pay to put myself through this trouble. But if somebody else does, I'll do it. So that's what's happening here. And it'll be fun. 3 to 5 on Tuesdays for the foreseeable future until I get through it anyway. And you know what will probably happen? I'll get to the end. Credits will run. And then John will go, "We haven't really finished it." And I'll say, "What?" And he'll say, "There's this whole other thing that's on disc 4 or whatever. You know, some bull crap's going to come up. I just know it. Just feel it." This happened with 2 Remake. I hit credits. That's end for me. He's like, "No, there's a whole other thing." No, that's like it.
The whole game is designed to be played through multiple times, right?
Yeah, that's the concept, I guess, but I ain't doing that. My rule was play till there's some credits, and then I'm out.
Yeah, you fulfilled your, as you like to say, your fiduciary.
My fiduciary duty. That's right. Still, the scariest thing I ever played was 7. To this day, that game's so effed up. Oh, my gosh, dude. 7. And that baby in 8, the baby in the basement in 8. These are all horrible things that happened. And I've only played a little bit of 4 back in the day on the GameCube, and I got chicken and quit playing. So this
which
is going to be mostly
which one
new.
Was the one that made you prematurely and abruptly end the stream?
That was Resident Evil 7, I think. Part of 7. Yeah. And I was just like, I can't do this. This is terrible. Goodbye, everybody. You know, like it's just really gets me, which is so stupid because I can then turn around and watch 8 really gnarly horror movies in a row and they don't bother me at all. Yeah. It's about me being in a place where I have to control the outcome and my brain feels differently about that. If I see a slasher movie or a genuinely scary horror movie, I'm enjoying it for what it is, but I'm not worried because I can't control what this idiot on screen's gonna do. He's gonna do whatever he does with or without me, right?
Right.
But in a video game, none of this happens without me interacting with it, and I just know I'm gonna screw it up. It's a weird thing with me, but anyway, that's tonight, 3 p.m. Check it out. We'll be right here today playing that. You got to get psyched up for it. In the meantime, please join us on our Patreon, patreon.com/TMS. No commercials ever. Pre-show content every day. Couch parties on the weekend. Although this weekend is this Friday will be our play date. So Friday from 10 a.m. to noon, We'll be playing something. Don't know what it is yet, what we're doing. Maybe we haven't played Among Us in a bit, so maybe we'll do that again. I don't know. Bob, you're always welcome to those, by the way, if you're around.
I was just about to say, maybe I'll see if I can join you guys.
Yeah, always. You're always welcome if you're around for that stuff. That and anything else we do on the extra. So anyway, if any of this sounds interesting to you, then go sign up, patreon.com/TMS. Big thanks to everybody who already did. And we picked winners in the Patreon for a little contest we did in there, separate from what we do with the Morning Forum. So congrats to those three folks, and your stuff is already on their way. We sent them yesterday, so you should see them in the mail shortly. All right, we're going to play a song at the end. Brian left me a little snippet of music to play for you guys while he's out of town, so big thanks to him for doing that. This is a request from Chuck Gaskill, who says, "Hello, Scooter and Brandy Buck. You mentioned a good cover by War Pigs, or of War Pigs, by T-Pain on episode 2439 of the show. This cover by Puddle's Pity Party is awesome as well. I think you'll both enjoy it. Feel free to use it as fill-in if you don't have any other birthday or other requests. Keep up the show. Keep up the hobo, though, Chuck." All right, Chuck, guess what? Brian was here for you. He found the song that you liked, and he's going to play it. So that's going to happen right now. Bobby, thanks again for hanging with me today. Really appreciate it.
Any time at all.
Yep. Unless you're in the air.
Anytime at all, except for when I can't.
Except for that. It's a good way of putting it. Anyway, we'll be back, let's see, tomorrow with a show. Brian will be remote from Vegas, but doing a show from there, and I'll be here. And then Thursday back to sort of normal. Okay, everybody. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Thanks for hanging with us. And we'll see you next time.
Witches at black masses, evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Voila, yeah! Hide themselves away. They only started the war. Why shouldn't they go out to fight? They leave that role to the poor. Time will tell. Stops turning, ashes where the body's burning. Rednecks have the power. Hand of God has struck the hour. Day of judgment, God is calling. On the knees, the war pigs crawling. Begging mercy for their sins. Satan laughing spreads his wings.
If you like what you just heard, there's a very good chance you will like all the shows on the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
The Dirty Anus is open for business.